So this morning, what I'd like to do is offer a bit more fleshing out of some of the ways I've been leading into the meditations. So grounding, welcoming, spaciousness, how these support actually setting up our meditation, but also our supports when we find ourselves getting lost, caught up, distracted in conflict with our experience. But what I'd like to start with is a little bit around the object of focus we choose. You may have noticed that I haven't been too prescriptive about that. And one of the things, particularly when we're dealing with chronic illness, pain, trauma, disability, neurodivergence, and such conditions in our lives, is actually approaching the body directly can be very challenging. It can be very challenging to sit with the breath, with the body, when there's a lot of pain or trauma arising. So really giving yourself the permission, the freedom to feel into what is an appropriate anchor into the present moment for you. So last night I introduced sound, so a much more spacious awareness where the body sensations are part of a more wide open awareness. We also have the cultivation of the heart quality of kindness, loving kindness, friendliness, benevolence, and using the phrases as our anchor. But again, as we do this, we're always feeling into how it feels in the body, how it lands in the body, but in a much more indirect way. And we can also direct our phrases towards meeting our experience if it's challenging in the moment. Directing it a bit more towards compassion towards ourselves and towards others. And we may have other, particularly some of you have been meditating for quite some time, we may have other practices we've developed. So really giving yourself permission to use the practice that most supports you. So within that also is actually looking at what it is we're trying to do in meditation. We can build up stories of what it means to meditate, maybe around particular iconography or teachings we've had in the past. And sometimes these may not fit with our actual experience. And I think a more helpful way of thinking of meditation is one teacher I came across many years ago talked about it as the ABC of practice. That what we're actually creating in meditation practice is a bigger container, the ability to meet and be with more and more of our experience, both internal and external, without rejecting it. And this is not just, of course, experience that is challenging or is difficult, but also many of us can struggle with the joy and the beauty of life. We can have internal stories about not being deserving of joy, not being deserving of the beauty and the goodness of life. So it's about creating a bigger container that can hold more and more of our experience as a human being, without rejection, without judgment. And in the words of Viktor Frankl, he talks about how there's a space between stimulus and response, or we might think call it more reaction. And in that space, there is the possibility of finding a response that actually meets the circumstances of our lives. So that rather than having our lives be needing to be a particular way or having some story about how they should be or shouldn't be, we're actually meeting our life as it's arising in the moment. And within that spacious moment before reactivity arises, finding another way of responding, a way that actually is more supportive, more helpful, that actually brings some degree of well-being in the midst of. So I'd like to, as I said, flesh out a bit more these qualities of grounding, of welcoming, and of spaciousness, and how they can support us both in setting up our meditation, which is actually quite an important part. We can often think of meditation as starting when we actually engage with the object of our practice. But actually, the meditation begins once we actually engage with the intention to cultivate, to actually practice. And setting up the conditions for that are part of that. We can get into habits of just automatically taking up our posture and directly going into the meditation without really checking in and actually creating conditions that support that movement from maybe more engaged or busy daily life into stillness, into practice, into actually cultivating a different way of being. So taking the time to really check in with posture that's suitable and setting up that posture of grounding, of checking in on the quality of the heart mind and inclining it towards kindness, towards care, towards interest, towards welcoming and allowing experience as it is. So this quality of non-judgment. And creating spaciousness, so there's enough space for the wholeness of our experience. So grounding is that movement from a center of gravity of our attention, which for many of us is certainly in the upper half of the body, often in the head. We're very much concerned with and driven by thinking and thoughts. So it's really that movement to bring the attention down into a lower center of gravity. But also it invites certain things. This grounding invites a releasing and a relaxing, a softening in the body. And it invites a connection with the earth, with the ground, with support, with that quality of balance and stability. So in the Zen tradition, they talk about stable as a mountain, this sense of actually being able to be present and grounded in the midst of whatever's arising. So one of the ways we can do this is tuning into whatever part of the body is most associated with contact with the earth for us, with that sense of where we feel the weight and allowing the weight to be released to the earth. So we're not having to hold the body in any particular way, but there's a sense of the body being supported and being grounded in the earth. Now, again, that's something we need to explore for ourselves. And there are certain things around this. So it may be around finding a part of the body, the feet, the hands, the sitting bones, buttocks, so the traditional ones, which is quite neutral for us, which feels actually it's okay. Even though parts of the body may be in discomfort, this part of the body actually is okay. But we also may have a condition where actually a lot of the parts of our body, due to disability or something, aren't actually available for us to actually know. So it's how we sense into that contact of support from the earth. And that's something to really explore and find for ourselves as a resource, both to actually help us in setting up the posture, but also actually within meditation, when we find ourselves really caught by part of our experience. And you may have come across that word, papancha, that lovely Pali word that's really resonant with this quality of how the mind starts to proliferate and spin with part of our experience, and how we can really start to get quite agitated. And having this grounding, this sense of contact with the earth, can be a real resource to come back to, just to bring a moment of stability, a moment of balance back to our experience, so that we can, in a sense, not be so caught up in that spin of papancha. So this grounding becomes a resource that can become available to us, not only in our meditation practice, but also in our daily life. This connection with some aspect of our experience where we can just feel ourselves supported, that it's an okay part of our experience, of our bodily experience, that really enables us to find balance and stability, from which we can then open out again. So the second quality is this quality of spaciousness. So from this ground, the opening out of the attention. And certainly for me, I find a more whole body practice much more useful. Many of us may have been taught a very narrow attention. So if we work with the breath, it can often be just around the nostrils or maybe just in the belly. And for some of us, that may work. But explore and experiment with how actually a more whole body, a more expansive awareness, actually can create more spaciousness to allow more of our experience. And what it also enables within that is that, rather than actually getting drawn into what is difficult in our experience, we can place the experience more consciously on parts of the body or areas of the body that are okay. So these contact points, these grounding points I talked about, but it also may just be another part of the body that actually feels okay, that can actually be a resource to counterbalance any challenge or any difficulty we may have in the body. And of course, as I've already pointed out, if the body is a place of difficulty to actually rest the attention because of pain or trauma or maybe neurodivergence, and we've got a lot of agitated energy, or the senses are being overstimulated by some external stimulus, then actually sound, if that's helpful, can be a way of actually opening the attention out even wider, so that actually there's more space for our experience. One of the things we find is that our tendency, particularly with something that's challenging, is for our awareness to contract down around it, so that it becomes the only part of our experience that's available to us. So this movement out to create space, so that it's part of something wider, can actually give it more space to be without getting so caught up in it. So again, this can be something to explore in your practice, how spaciousness can support being with the difficult, being with the challenging. and using that, however we might practice. So even if we use a narrow focus of practice, if we find ourselves getting caught up, maybe using expanding that awareness, that more spacious awareness, as a way of again creating the space so that the difficulty can actually dissipate to some degree, and we can come back to some sense of stability before returning to our focus, a more narrow focus, if that's what supports our practice in general. But all of this is grounded in an attitude, of welcoming, of allowing, attitudes of kindness, of compassion, of care, of interest. And this is something to really start to explore and notice in your experience. When you meet your experience with resistance, with reversion, with rejection, what does that do? How does that feel? What does that create in the experience? When you meet your experience with welcoming, with allowing, with kindness, what does that do? What the teachings of the Buddha point towards is that how we meet our experience, our relationship to the stimuli, whether that's external or internal sensations, thoughts, whatever, that our relationship to them colors or shapes our experience. And this is a really, really central and important insight within Buddhist, within Dharma practice, that actually we participate in creating our experience. Not that we're responsible for what's happening outside in the external world, but actually our relationship shapes how we experience what's arising in the moment. And this is where we can actually start to. The more we can meet our experience from this attitude of allowing. So actually, all experience is welcome. Nothing is excluded or left out of our awareness. It's all to be met with kindness and care. And in that meeting it with kindness and care, we create that space between stimulus and reaction that Viktor Frankl talks about, where actually the possibility of an appropriate response arises, a response to things as they are actually arising, not to our thoughts about how they should be or shouldn't be, what we want or don't want, but actually, this is how it is right now. And how do I meet this in a way that actually brings kindness and compassion and care to it, that responds in a way that actually lessens the suffering, lessens the contraction and the tension, and actually brings some degree, however small that may be, some degree of well-being, some degree of ease in the midst of. And this is one of the core challenges of Dharma practice. And in a sense, this is a lot of what we do in our meditation. We cultivate these qualities of heart, such as kindness, compassion, generosity, patience, but also qualities of the mind, such as mindful attention, non-judgment, and welcoming, so that we are actually able to create this bigger container that can hold more and more of life as it presents itself to us, with compassion and with care, both for ourselves, for others, and for the world we inhabit and that we're intimately embedded in. So, I'd like to highlight two qualities at this point that really support this. One is the quality of patience. There's a lovely quote from Tara Brach around this. Patience gives you joy in the process of waking up. Without patience, you may find yourself at war with your own forgetfulness or reactivity. So we will forget. Charlotte Choku Beck, who talked about the ABC of practice, also talked about how there's a huge difference between being aware 30% of the time and being aware 70% of the time. But she also talked about how she'd never actually come across somebody who was 100% aware all the time. So it's an interesting thing, this. We are going to forget. We are going to react. And patience is what actually supports us in not taking that personally, in not actually starting to make that a problem, that we forget to be mindful, we forget to meet our experience with kindness, that we react and reject what's arising in the moment. This is part of what it is to be a human being. But patience allows us to actually settle into the joy of the process of practice itself. To actually be sustained by our intention to cultivate these qualities of the heart, our intention to be present. Even in those times when we don't meet that intention, that actually that intention is still there. And that's something to actually appreciate and rejoice in ourselves. And the other quality is the quality of trust. We usually come across it translated as faith, but I think trust is a much better translation. And it's the first quality in the five spiritual faculties that the Buddha listed. And trust has two components. And again, it is also a quality we cultivate. So the two components, one component is trust in the practice itself, that in the intention to practice, even in those times when it doesn't feel like anything is happening, that it feels like actually our practice is going backwards, rather than any sense of progression or movement. Actually, the trust that actually there's something about the intention to cultivate these qualities of heart, the intention to be present, the intention to engage with awareness, with our lives, and meet more and more of our lives, that actually does over time have an impact in how we are in the world. It does actually make a difference. But the other aspect of trust is trust in ourselves. It's trust in our ability to practice, particularly leaning into that in those times when practice can feel like a struggle. And we all have periods like that in our life where it can just feel like practice is a struggle. It's not going anywhere. It can often feel like it's quite pointless. But actually, trust that if we just keep that intention, keep that connection with that deeper thread of our lives, of what it is we value, that actually practice is something we can do, we can engage with. But also the other aspect of trust is trust in ourselves to know what's appropriate for us in our practice. That rather than trying to fit ourselves into some idea or some external view we have of what practice is supposed to be, that actually when we can actually meet ourselves with kindness, when we can remember that we actually know and have the wisdom and the understanding of what's needed, what posture is going to be most supportive, what practice, what object of attention is going to be most supportive, that remembering to ground, to welcome, to create spaciousness, all of these things are available to us and are things that we can tune into. And to really cultivate that trust in our own ability to know what's appropriate for us in any moment. Ultimately, the Buddha talks about how we become independent in the practice, which doesn't mean we don't have sangha and community. It doesn't mean we don't still have teachers that we learn from. But actually, more and more, we develop a trust in our own ability to know what's appropriate in our practice, what's going to support us in meeting our lives as they unfold. So the encouragement for today, particularly for this morning, is to really allow that sense of movement as we move from our life outside of retreat to whatever that may be, however engaged or busy that may be or may not be, to being in a community of practice together, to being on retreat. And that gentle putting down what we don't need to carry. So it's natural for the momentum of our lives to carry forward into the retreat space. And some of that may still need to be engaged with. But also some of that can be let go of, can be put down gently as something that can be taken up again if needs be, but doesn't need to be brought into the weekend, into the retreat. So really the invitation to put down what isn't necessary and to really cultivate and explore the grounding, the welcoming, the attitude we meet our experience with, and the spaciousness as ways of setting up our posture, our meditation each time we come into stillness meditation or movement meditation, but also as resources to come back to check into when we find ourselves spinning with some aspect of our experience, when we find ourselves in conflict with our lives as they're arising in any moment. So I'd like to finish just saying a little bit about movement meditation and these periods of movement meditation. So first and foremost, I would see them as something to check in terms of self-care and self-regulation. So depending on your condition at this moment, your energy levels, to what degree you can continue practicing in a slightly more formal way, or to what degree you need to actually really rest and take care and come back to that sense of baseline, of stability, that I talked a bit about last night, so that we're not pushing ourselves too much, so that then things crash and we're not able to keep engaged with the retreat. So really tuning into and trusting your instinct around that. So movement meditation, for some of us, depending on our energy levels, it may be formal walking meditation that may be appropriate for us. So again, a little bit about formal meditation, formal walking meditation, finding your path, maybe about 10, 15 steps. And just at the beginning of the path, just taking some time again to ground, to center, just to stabilize. And then just gently walking for the sake of walking itself. So not trying to get anywhere, not trying to have any particular experience, just using the process of walking as a grounding into the present moment. And, you know, if we find ourselves getting lost, we can stop at any moment along the path and just again, collect and gather, ground, connect with the earth before moving on. If walking meditation isn't suitable, but you still feel like you want to keep some semblance of a formal practice going, what we can think of for walking meditation really is bringing stillness meditation to something more complex, but something which is repetitive. So it's a bridge between stillness and more engaged daily life. So we may do this in a way that actually the body can rest, but we engage with something repetitive at the same time. So we might do it in having a cup of tea. So we might just sit in a comfortable, relaxed posture, but actually really pay attention to the act of reaching out to the cup, the movement of lifting the cup to the lips, taking, tilting the cup, the taste, the warmth as it goes down, the movement of putting the cup back down. And actually use that repetitive movement as a way of actually bringing the qualities of stillness meditation into something slightly more complex where there's more stimuli going on. We could also sit comfortably and actually just mimic walking meditation by just lifting first one leg, putting it down, then the other leg. So we're actually mimicking that repetitive movement of walking, but in a comfortable posture where we're not using so much energy. It could also be just lifting one hand, again, putting it down in the lap, lifting another hand. So exploring how we can use a repetitive movement in a comfortable way that doesn't tax the body, that doesn't actually strain our levels of energy, because many of us here are actually dealing with quite difficult levels of energy in terms of the conditions we have, is finding that way of just engaging in a relaxed, easeful posture, some repetitive movement that we can use as a focus for bringing slightly more complexity to the qualities that we cultivate in stillness meditation. Finally, if we do feel that actually we just need to rest and really just take care of our energy levels and really loosen any sense of formal practice, we can also create a way of engaging with that in a way that's a bit more playful. So as we rest, we might just allow ourselves to again, tune into what's appropriate, whether it's the body or sound. We might just try to see what's the last breath or what's the last sound before we fall asleep. So we're gently, just playfully, allowing the attention either to rest in the breath without any formal trying too hard, or in sounds, and just trying to notice that last breath or that last sound before we drift off into sleep, if that's what's needed. Just as a way of maintaining a playful level of awareness as we rest and relax. So the invitation now is, we'll have 25 minutes, so we'll come back at 20 past 11 for another stillness practice together. So really to explore what supports you right now in some level of continuity of practice, while at the same time tuning into what supports self-care and self-regulation. And to really allow yourself to explore that and what supports.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.